Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's earnings and business update call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Brett Keenan, Director of Finance. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I would like to start by identifying the participants on today's call. In addition to myself, we are joined by our Chairman and CEO, Jeremy Olsen, as well as the future NFL Hall of Famer, Ray Lewis. During this call, the company will make various statements about its projections and expectations for the future. All such statements are forward-looking statements, and while they reflect current expectations, they involve risks and uncertainties and are not guarantees of future performance. You should review Sports Field's filings with the SEC for more information regarding the factors that could cause actual results to differ from those currently projected or expected. The company does not plan on updating or revising any forward-looking statements during the next quarter. So now I'd like to hand things over to the Sports Field Chairman and CEO, Jeremy Olsen. Jeremy?
Thanks, Brett. Welcome to our first investor update call. I appreciate everybody taking time out of your busy day to join us on the call today. This is going to be a slightly unconventional quarterly earnings call. Being our first and inaugural call, I figured it was a good idea to sort of reintroduce the investment community to the company, and obviously this will be the first in a continuing cadence of quarterly calls moving forward. So that said, this is a really exciting time at Sports Field Holdings. We're moving right now from what I like to call proof of concept phase into our rapid growth phase. And I think this can be evidenced most simply by our $15.75 million in awarded contract sales year to date, which is very exciting. Since coming on a couple of years ago, I've implemented a lot of change within the company during that proof of concept phase. We're currently moving out of that, getting out from under some legacy products. Our pipeline of sales leads is very robust. We've expanded our sales team, streamlined sales operations, which is already paying off in the months since implementation. And I'm going to detail all of this further as we move through the call. Of course, we also have a product that is resonating greatly in the industry. We're seeing great buy-in from professional athletes like Ray Lewis, who's with us today. They love the product, and our conversion rate with potential customers who come and actually experience our fields for themselves is fantastic. We're innovating as well with research facilities that we've now constructed, and we want to quantify the benefits of our turf products and be able to report that back to the general public. And to that point, we've been working even with the ESPN Sports Science, John Brinkus, to help us work on different tools for testing our products. So a lot of very exciting things happening. As we're now moving into the profitability phase, when I joined the company, it was immediately clear that there were ongoing projects that were not going to be profitable, as amazing as that sounds. I inherited a business that needed help, but had a great product and had tremendous promise. So we've finished those legacy business opportunities, and we're now moving into something far more exciting, actual growth. So as a quick reminder, our company was created with a concept of solving all the inherent shortfalls that exist in the turf industry today. Roughly 98% or higher of the fields in the United States that are currently down are composed of a sand and crumb rubber infill. And this has been the case, this has been happening for over 20 years. So what do owners and actual players think about those products, and why are they excited about ours? Number one, we got rid of all the flying rubber that contains carcinogens. We also improved the infill stability to reduce the incidence of injury due to cleat lock. The fields are far cooler, so there's less issues with heat exhaustion of the players. The fields are softer, which has reduced the wear and tear on athletes from simply playing on it, as well as reduce the risk of concussion, which is a huge issue in the NFL these days. And then, of course, we do it all. We implemented our turnkey, one-stop shop where we're the only person to blame if there's a problem. So the combination of those things have really solved all of the issues that were plaguing the industry and have positioned us for great growth. And to that point, a little further explanation, the industry is really segmented into three major disciplines. You have the manufacturing and sales of turf, which we do, the installation of the turf, which we also do, and then athletic facilities, site design, engineering, construction, and construction management, which we also do. We compete in all three phases of the process, and there's really no competitors in our space that exist who own even 5% of the total market share, which is roughly around $3.6 billion domestically alone. So when I came on board, I knew we needed buy-in from top-tier athletes. If we're going to proclaim that we have a truly better product that does all of these great things, we're going to need people as proof sources that would add credibility to our claims and that we could get national support from very quickly. We fortunately were able to get an introduction to Ray Lewis, who's well-known to despise turf, especially synthetic turf, and we pitched him on our surface. And although he was initially skeptical, he took the meeting and immediately wanted to see more. He later was able to experience our product firsthand, and he was so impressed he wanted to become a larger part of what we're doing. Thus, at this time, I'd like to introduce NFL legend Ray Lewis, our football ambassador. Ray, thanks for joining us.
Jeremy, thank you, man. I appreciate you. to everyone on the line, thank you for joining the conference. I think, you know, just my brief history on just the type of turf that I've played on in the past, you know, it's always, I used to always ask myself, like, if I'm running into people full speed, the way my job was for so many years, and I was able to make it out of those battles, mostly, you know, pretty much healthy. And then my real battle became, and all of our battles as players became to be from the impact of the injuries from the turf, of when you fall on the turf, I mean, it blows your mind that you can separate a shoulder, you can tear off skin from your body that just, you know, puts you in a situation the rest of the week where you have to take showers differently. You got to put bandages over your arms for the showers. You know, when you think about how the cleat themselves in this old turf with the turf that they're using now with the rubber and the sand and all of these different things, how they lock and they get, and when they lock in, as soon as the cleat get locked into this rubber and things, the first thing that twists, your ankle twists, your knees twist. And when you think about all the years I've been playing football and to watch some of the greatest athletes in the world actually get their career prolonged or slowed down simply because of turf, right? And you ask yourself a real question, and this is me asking myself this question, you know, if we're the product of these brands and we're the ones that keeps the lights on, then why aren't we protected? Why aren't we taken care of? Why aren't we sitting in these committee meetings when we should be picking out the turfs and we should be feeling what the turfs feel like? You know, I tell you a brief story about my introduction to sports field. I never forget meeting Bill in New York at a cigar thing, and he bought this turf box. And at first, I'm skeptical about it, and I'm just, you know, kind of letting it go about it. But as soon as I started to feel the likeliness of how grass and that is matched, like almost identical to grass, like natural grass, I quickly became a believer. Like, I'm talking about, I was like, wait a minute. So when the heck was this when I was playing? You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I needed to have this. You know, if I'm landing on this instead of rubber and sand, I win. I mean, I simply win. And I remember telling Bill, I'm like, man, you know, listen, you guys have something that's really life changing. And I think a lot of people really need to look into this to see how far it goes. A few weeks back, I went to IMG, and my son had a track tournament there, and he ran 300 hurdles. And it was really interesting because when I went out there, I was there for all day. One thing about track meets, there all day. And I'm watching, and you know, the guys that told me where our field was put in at. And so I take my walks over there, and all these kids on this turf. And when you hear the conversation about this turf, oh my God, the turf feels so good. It feels so light. Man, my feet, I just feel quick. And you hear all of these kids, and I'm just sitting back smiling because none of them don't know that I'm truly connected to the turf like that. But I'm watching this happen, and I'm saying to myself, this is what should be recorded. Like, forget, you know, trying to explain to people what it does. Come see it. Come see it yourself. Come let these kids be your own storytellers, because they can tell you the true story. You know, I went on it myself, and just to break out of a plant coming downhill and not feel the tension that you feel when you play now. You know, you think about how much faster the game can really be. The game can be so much faster if we actually implemented this type of turf into these fields and these turfs that these kids are playing on in college. These kids, these professional athletes is playing on in the NFL. And when you think about the thing, I think that sold me out of it all, right? I never forget this. My last few years, we were playing the Cowboys right before I injured my tricep October 7, 2012. And I never forget having a conversation with the owner of the Ravens, Steve Bisciotti. And I went to him, and he was like, man, what's wrong? He's like, you don't look well. I said, Steve, man, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, me and you are friends, and I'm glad, you know, we can speak open to each other. But the bottom line is, man, listen, Steve, man, this turf is killing me, man. Like, look, I play the perfect game. I hit people full speed. I give everything I got. And then I leave because my ankle twisted. I leave because my knee messed up. I leave because my shoulder's bruised. And none of that is from the game. It's all because of this turf that is so, quote-unquote, durable that, oh, I don't have to change it all the time. Listen, man, if you don't invest in nothing else, well, and I was so open with him, if you don't invest in nothing else, invest in having us healthy when the game is over. And if you don't care about, if the owners don't care about us per se, well, just invest in the livelihood that we're fathers. And sooner or later, one day, we want to walk around and we want to play with our kids. We want to have that opportunity, too. Yeah, we want to come out here and give a great showing. And yeah, we want to come out here and have a great game. We want to do all of that. But, man, you got to think about what the chum and rubber and sand and stuff is doing, man, just the health concerns alone from it, you know. And so I'm just saying, you know, when you watch what the company has done, you know, and this is me transitioning from telling Steve that we needed to change, but when you watch what this company has done truly, up under Jeremy's guidance, it's just been impressive. It's been very impressive, because I think it's a really interesting time for the company, period, you know. And I think that's where my interest and my excitement for being a part of this, because my kids, I have sons. You know, I have two sons who's playing on these same type of turfs, you know, and I'm pleading to guys to save my babies. Right, I'm a father, so before I can go to the National Football League, I'm saying save my sons, that they don't have to sometimes deal with, you know, the nagging injuries, you know, that are created because of these artificial turfs, man, that's really not helping us. And so my heart goes out to all of these kids and all of these people on this very, very challenging turf. But I think my passion and my focus to deliver a quality product that we all should appreciate, that we all should understand that this is the way we should be going. That's why I joined in, and that's why I'm happy to say I'm happy to join this call today, because sports field is where I believe the future is going, and I think we as players would appreciate it if people took the time to think about us instead of just convenience. Thank you.
Ray, thank you so much for the comments and the terrific support. At this time, I'd like to transfer the call over to Brett Keenan, our Director of Finance, to review the Q1 results.
Thank you, Jeremy. In 2016, we were awarded $15.75 million in new sales contracts. Revenue from these contracts will be earned over the next 12 to 15 months. Our busy season for these projects and installations begins this summer. In the first quarter of 2016, our revenue increased 56% to $811,000 compared to $517,000 in the first quarter of 2015. In contrast, the operating expenses increased by 126% to $955,000 compared to $442,000 in the first quarter of 2015. This overall increase of almost $560,000 is primarily attributable to the following operating expenses: an increase in stock-based compensation expense of about $475,000, an increase from zero in R&D expenditures of almost $60,000 at our various field testing sites, a net increase in third-party professional services or fees of $23,000, a modest increase in T&E, warranty expense, and marketing and advertising expenses. While the first quarter 2016 is at an operating loss, based upon the sales contracts we currently have in place, we expect to have a modest operating profit for 2016. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Brett. So, as I initially mentioned, we have tremendous momentum as the plans that we put in place early last year are starting to pay off. And it's going to continue. A sales contract in the first 5 months of the year, like I said, was $15.75 million. Our goal was $17 million in signed contracts this year. So clearly we're going to hit that number and hopefully exploit it greatly. But I want to explain what you should expect to see as we continue to improve. Number one, expansion. We've expanded our sales team from basically zero to six over the last 18 months. And these guys are strategically placed around the United States. What's even more exciting is we have a former NFL quarterback, Jay Schrader, who has become part of our sales team, an incredible co-op for the company. So he and our sales reps, along with we have five different distribution partners, creating a network of over 22 individuals that are out talking about our products every day, and we continue to expand that. We're also expanding our trade show presence from two last year to six this year. And we feel like that, along with some of the rebranding we'll talk about, is going to really help promote and drive the company to even greater heights in the coming year. When I mentioned earlier that we were turnkey and handled every aspect of the project, I meant that in we are the contractor and the supplier of record of the turf. But we would typically outsource the design, architecture, engineering, and even some of the construction. We have now managed to bring in-house virtually all of those activities. We have our own architect on staff, engineers. We have our own project management, construction management team in place. And by the end of the year, we'll have our first full installation team in place as well. All of those things allow us to not only control margin better and reduce our costs, but also allow us to control quality and ensure that every single time every customer is getting the exact same product and manage the customer satisfaction level. In terms of branding and R&D, we finally got our branding kicked off. We spent almost a year trying to come up with a brand that would really speak to the industry in terms of what we were trying to say and who we were. And we found that name in our operating company called First Form. It represents our mission to be first in the industry in every facet of the industry. And we want to form our clients' visions into reality. Everyone has a different vision of what their perfect athletic facilities are. We now have the team in place that can bring it to life. So we feel strongly that this new brand is going to resonate greatly in the industry. We have a new website. I encourage you all to go visit with an investor portal that will help us to attract in web referrals and other opportunities. We've also expanded our team of ambassadors from Ray Lewis now into several other sports, professional soccer. We have Chris Winger, 12-year veteran, current player with the MLS team Real Salt Lake City. We have Major League Baseball legend Rick Honeycutt, current pitching coach for the LA Dodgers, who speaks about our baseball products. Obviously, Ray Lewis, and we continue to expand that as we move forward. And we're not standing still on the R&D front. we recently finished a job at IMG Academy. And on that campus, we have gained agreement with them to put in our living laboratory. It is multiple test plots up to 50 yards in length that are going to allow us to test their athletes on our products, to gain actual anecdotal data, see which performs best for each sport for the athletes, continue to try new products and develop our products on their facility. We're extremely excited about that four-year engagement, and we're going to continue to grow that relationship with the Academy. So we're continuing to invest in the future of our company. So what does all this mean? We've talked about the robust pipeline of opportunities, well in excess of $100 million of deals that our guys are out chasing. We aren't going to win all of those projects, but we're going to win roughly, based on the numbers, at least 12% of the projects we go after. What's really amazing is that when we get a client to travel to one of our sites, our win rate jumps to over 40%, which tells us that we truly have a product that resonates. Once you experience it, you're going to want to own it. And we find that the more fields we put down, the better our odds of victory increase across the country. And we believe that's really, really huge. Streamlining our operations is also paying off. We completed our first project this year on time and under budget, and we plan for that to continue as we move forward, because the foundations that we laid last year and getting organized are now taking the bearing fruit, if you will. So the spring months are typically a little softer. So what you should expect is a little softness at the beginning of Q2. Coming into June is when all of these projects that we have won start to get built. The revenue will start to flow incrementally, and that's when you'll see the revenue streams really start to take off. So June through Q3, Q4, and beyond will just continue to improve over time. And we're very, very excited about that. So to summarize, we're extremely excited about the amount of revenue we're bringing in, about our ability to deliver moving forward profitably, and where we're going as a company. So at this time, I'd like to open up the lines to answer any questions that you might have.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Again, that's star and one on your touch-tone phone. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. And we'll go ahead and take our first question from Bernard Germa. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for the call, and thanks to Mr. Lewis for giving us a interesting perspective from somebody that plays on those things. You know, we talk finance, we talk business, but we don't play on it. He does, so his insight was very appreciated. But anyway, talking about finance, could you tell me what is the biggest project you have that you can handle today? As you are ramping up on everything, I'd like to have a perspective. And, you know, how do you finance such a big project?
So, actually, it starts even before that. And thank you for the question. It actually comes back to more the market that we're playing in. So we cover the market of about $1 to $10 million projects. It's an athletic facility, small athletic facilities market that we feel is underserved. And so that's really the niche that we look to exploit. And as I said earlier on the call, there's no one out there that has even 5 to share in that space. So we feel like we really don't have a lot of competition for those projects, and so we've really narrowed our focus to those. And, of course, we've already, you know, we're working on projects in excess of $5 and $6 million currently, so those are really in our wheelhouse already.
Okay, but how do you finance that?
The project.
Do you have to performance bond to post or something like that?
That's correct, yes. So we sometimes in private business, bonding isn't required. As for our most recent job, we are bonding it. That's our $5.8 million job at Richland One. So you know, it just depends on public, private, whether or not it's bonded, and we have a bonding partner that we work with to do that.
Okay, so you go for a third-party bonding group.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Now, you have a lot of projects that are going to go on in this summer. you know, how do you scale up? Because that's if you're running four or five at the same time, and that requires a lot of people. So if you could maybe expand on that a bit.
Certainly. So right now we have the team in place we need to execute not only what we have going on right now, but frankly we could expand significantly without adding too much significant headcount. But to speak directly to the limiting factor, it's really on the project management side. Obviously the sales team and the administrative team, you know, our suppliers, that part's pretty straightforward. We don't require a lot of additional resources to grow substantially. Where we would have to grow is in our project management department. And we keep a sort of a bench of players, if you will, interviewed that we can call upon when we want to add those resources. The nice part is it doesn't add really incrementally to our burn rate, and we can grow substantially. For each person we hire, roughly, we can take on another 10 projects. So it allows us to grow with one person, you know, substantially.
Okay. So in terms of the labor force itself, the low-end labor force, you just recruit locally through other companies or something, you know, you subcontract some part of it?
So we actually look to recruit the project management piece of it.
Yeah.
In terms of our installation crews, those are definitely groups that we're basically out for hire. They're fairly easy to come by in terms of our installers. Or we use a third party. Either one, if we get overflow, we can always use a third party.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And, the company seems to be moving, and I hope we're going to have a good end of year, a good summer, where you can put some numbers on the board.
I think we agree there, Bernard. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Question.
Bye.
Thank you. And just a reminder, that is star and one on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. Our next question comes from Dominique DiBruno. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Very educational broadcast today. Jeremy, I just have one question for you. Realistically, what is the maximum growth you can sustain without significantly increasing your current burn rate?
Right. I think, you know, and that ties a little bit, Dominic, to the previous question, right, which is obviously we could grow exponentially simply by adding our project management team, adding to it, and then sourcing installation crews. So you know, if it would be less than a 3 to 5% impact, you know, to double the amount of revenue that we would do. So it's going to allow us to really grow EBITDA as we move forward and grow over our existing burn. And that's pretty exciting.
Well, that's great. I mean, it answered my question, and it really seems like the company's heading in the right direction, especially since you've come on board with it. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank everyone today. It was a great broadcast.
Well, Dominic, thank you. I'm always open to accepting compliments, so much appreciated.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. And we'll go ahead and take our next question from John Harrell. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good afternoon. So following up kind of on question two, how should we think about that with regards to the cash burn? And I'm just curious how that might compare to other players in the industry, if you can comment on that. And then I've got another question.
Sure. So I guess, honestly, the bigger answer is what players are in our industry. In order to do a comparable, there have to be comparables. And that's somewhere where we really don't have a great deal of competition, as I alluded to in the call. Because of the way we set up the company and our business model, we've kind of eliminated most of our competitors outside of small regional firms because we're a national contractor. We're also a turf manufacturer, and we also are a turf installer. And when you look at all those things, I think it really puts us in a position where we don't shy away from competition. So, again, I know that sounds evasive, but it really is difficult to compare because there are people out there that that manufacture turf, and that's about it, right? Then everything happens through contractors and outsourcing. So I don't really find that it compares to us, and I think that's why when you look at the $3.6 billion industry that is small athletic facilities, it's a big ocean for us out there. It really is.
So with regards to what competitors are in the space, how do you compare with them in terms of product development?
That's a great question. I feel like we've really found a niche, and we're probably a year or two even ahead of just about everybody that I've seen, if not longer than that, in terms of looking at the athlete. You know, we don't start with machines and equipment to test our products, although we do use them just as everyone else does. The ultimate test in our mind is what do the athletes say? What do people like Ray Lewis say? We want to know what the highest level performing athletes in the world think, and that's why we went to IMG. They wanted our product, so once we sold them the product, we started talking to them about a bigger picture and how we could leverage them and they could leverage us to really try to continue to push the industry to develop the highest level products available. So I don't think anyone else out there is doing it, not that I have heard of. So I really believe that's a huge advantage for us in the space.
Okay, thanks for the answer, and sign a whole bunch more contracts this year.
We'll do our best, I promise you.
Thank you. And just a reminder to participants, if you would like to ask a question today, you may press star and one on your touch-tone phone. Our next question comes from Greg Liginza. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You've got the Living Lab now, which is basically like a testing ground. So what are you learning from that, and how do you make improvements based upon what your development's telling you?
That's a really interesting question. I love this topic, by the way. We're learning an immense amount very, very quickly. To that point, we have multiple test plots on that facility, so we're able to actually test different products simultaneously against each other. And so we're testing different fibers. We're testing different backings of the turf. We're testing different infill products on the turf. And we're even testing different shock absorption pads on the turf. So there's a multitude of things that variables with these products that you'd be amazed when you really get into it. So the beauty is when you bring them all together and then you get athletes on them to tell you how they perform. But on the flip side of it is we're also looking at, are these green products? Can we make them easier to recycle? Are they truly shock absorbent? You know, and so we're making improvements to the product constantly. And the beauty of this is it becomes an R&D pipeline for us that we continue to fund on an even higher level. Once we find all of the types of products and the way we want them to come together, then we go to the next level, which is how can we improve upon that? And then we start working with the engineering team and we design product that we can continue to push the market. So the Living Lab is going to continue on as not only a product testing facility, but a product development facility. And it's very similar to, you know, some big names out there like Gatorade, Under Armour. They do the similar types of things, and there's a huge benefit to it.
Are there any specific products that are in development?
I would love to speak to that directly. Although I would be cautioned to do that in this forum, but I do appreciate the question.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. And we'll go ahead and take our next question from Matt Chipman. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Jeremy. I've got a couple of questions. You mentioned a little bit about your competition and who is in your space. Specifically, you know, who would you name as companies that would be in your space, and have any of them made any adjustments to their product to potentially either mimic your product or making changes to remove the chrome rubber that are in their products?
So I think I've hit a little bit on the first part of your question, which is we don't really see – when I say our product and you say your product – it's much bigger than just turf, right? It's the drainage system in the turf. It's the construction of the turf. It's the
the warranty and the standing behind the turf. It's the turf itself, the performance of the turf. So a lot goes into what you call a product. And for us, that product is so much bigger in scope than most of the companies out there. There are players in the synthetic turf industry that are substantial players, but they're not our focus. Our focus is that we'll absorb that business by providing turnkey and providing the best product available. So that's sort of that perspective, if you will.
Okay, appreciate that. And then what are your current margins? And if you could you explain how those margins have changed since you started bringing more of your processes in-house?
I was waiting for that question. Sure. Well, obviously I look at margin a couple of different ways that you can impact it, right, through pricing and then obviously cost and COGS reduction. So we're hitting that from both ends. And as I mentioned earlier on the call, the pricing piece is we started out with some legacy management, some legacy deals that were bid at cost or in that area to get some products down in order to have people come and see the product and that sort of thing. And now we've moved from those legacy products to now pricing at market. So our pricing is at the market. We're no longer, having to be that loss leader, competitive win based on price. We're winning on quality now. And actually, the last job we won was almost a $6 million deal, and we were the third in terms of line of cost. So we weren't even close to the lowest. So we're pricing it at market. And so that's one huge way we've impacted margins recently. And then on the bottom side, bringing those processes in-house like the construction management and the architecture and the design, those have helped us contain costs as well by doing some of our renderings, which is something we used to have to outsource. It's starting to bring down our cost of goods. So we're attacking it from both ways. And in addition to that, now that we have, 15.75 million in contracts, our suppliers are far more open to discussing not only terms with us, but also pricing, and we're able to drive that pricing down as well. So we're really attacking it from every angle possible.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you. And it does appear we have no further questions at this time. I will now hand it back over to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, I just want to thank everybody for jumping on the call today. Like I said, this is the first in a continuing cadence of quarterly calls that we will do. And we are at a point now where over the last year, the first 18 months of my regime, we've really been focused head down on perfecting the product, perfecting the delivery mechanisms, perfecting the sales team and the marketing and the branding. We feel like we've done that. And like I said before, we're going into growth mode. As part of that, we're starting to really turn our focus to our corporate presence and making sure that we keep our investors informed and up to date with what's going on. So you should expect to have these quarterly calls routinely here forward. And please, if you have any questions, please go to our website or email us at info@firstform.com or invest at firstform.com, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that way as well. And also, I also want to thank Ray for joining us, obviously, and Brett Keenan as well for joining us on the call today. Thank you.